When we start out, when we're little babies, we don't have a consciousness of the passage of time. We only have a consciousness of a presence or a now. And then, slowly but surely, we begin to be aware of self. And the moment that self-awareness comes into the picture, then we become aware of linear time, the passage of time. And as I've told you before, I believe that our awareness of time is the evidence of the fall of man, the awareness of the passage of time. And so in the context of that, once we are aware of time, then our minds always put us somewhere other than now. We have to do that in order to survive. And it becomes an unbelievably complex mind game, which society and all the organizations in society encourage. And what it does is it causes you to have something to look forward to give your life meaning. And so you look forward to birthdays, or you look forward, if you're going to school, you look forward to recess. Or during the week, you look forward to the weekend. And that progresses all the way through your life in more and more definitive points or events that you or society has created to give your life meaning. And society has invented a million of them. And from my standpoint, as you well know, they're non-events. Football games, basketball games, movies, drama. Everything that we do always has to be so that you can look forward to doing something else. And you create all of these non-events to give your life meaning. Society does, not just you. And so everything, you know, I mean, think about it. We've got Mother's Day coming up, which this year's Mother's Day speech should be good. But we've got Mother's Day and Father's Day and Grandfather's Day and July 4th and Christmas and Easter and Independence Day and Memorial Day and, you know, Halloween, Thanksgiving,
Arbor Day.
But we've got all of these things, and then that are national in scope, and then within that, there's all kinds of other days that go on for other organizations. I was involved with the mayor's office here, and every week, we'd have one of the jobs I had was to decide whether or not all these people that requested a proclamation that someday be named, you know, Boy Scouts Day or Girl Scouts Day or Secretary's Day or, you know, on and on and on would be, with the mayor would make that proclamation. And there's a request every day of the year in every major city that the mayor's office proclaimed and that it be proclaimed a day of something. And so our lives become an endless cycle of non-events. Just think, I mean, and I hope none of you are in that anymore, but you know, the Mavericks are going to play for some stupid thing tomorrow night. Who gives a... or there's cowboy games, or... Who cares?
You know, I noticed while we were camping.
Yeah.
I made the remark to Harry that even in trying to get away to rest, there was none. There was still the radios going and newspapers, and it's like you can't function without.
But it's just another example that the whole world is in deception. And so, what I wanted to spend some time, we've talked about this a long time ago before we started doing tapes, but I wanted to talk about the Hebrew concept of events and the Hebrew concept of time. Because if you don't understand that, then everything else is, you'll just make this another non-event that you can sort of give meaning to your ridiculous lives. You understand what I'm saying? Nobody wants to argue with me? There must be some event that you think is important.
Scary nut bananas.
So about forward to bananas?
Well, you're talking about things that are, say, for example, entertainment.
Hebrews knew nothing about entertainment.
Why not?
Because they didn't need it. Their life was on the knife edge of soul and spirit.
Okay. But does that necessarily make entertainment bad, per se?
Well, but what it does is it makes entertainment an instrument which is an enemy of spirit. I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't watch, I don't give a flip with anybody, you know, whether, I don't care about entertainment, that's not what I'm saying, but I want you to see it correctly.
Well, I guess I'm having a hard time with that, you know.
There's a difference between, like, entertainment that gets you away and you get totally absorbed, and then entertainment that you do, like...
Well, what's the difference?
Well, didn't they, like, play musical instruments? Like
in the temple.
But that wasn't really an entertainment kind of thing, though. That's what I'm saying.
Well, what about? I mean, let's. I'm saying that Christ can be seen in everything. I'm not talking about, but I'm saying that if you don't see that, then you are, you're guilty of apostasy. You're guilty of escaping from God.
I still find myself looking forward to things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I know it, and I agree with it. And I still find myself looking forward to things. Like, I'll think, oh boy, Pentecost is June 14th, or oh boy, in another 3 hours there's Bible study, or oh boy, yeah, it's Friday, we're going to the shady side.
Well, I just want us to see
but
what it is.
Yeah. But I don't think anymore it's so much an escape mechanism. In the depths of last year, John said something to me one time about how he had seen that what I did was I segmented my day and my week and just lived in little segments of time and had everything perfectly ordered, and part of the reason was so that I wouldn't be exposed to any situation where it had to prophesy. That was true, but another thing that was true that he didn't see but I saw was that I was just trying to get through. And I would block out little sections, 4 hours. If I get through this 4 hours, then this and this is going to happen.
Right.
But that doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Remember, let's look at it from another standpoint. You all know that we've talked about it long enough that if nobody knows it, you should. But the word to worship just simply means to give importance to. Or the word sacrifice to means to give breath to. So the question isn't whether or not that you are, that one thing is right or wrong or indifferent. The question is, which gods are you worshiping? And that seems to be the only question. Which gods do you worship? Now, Let me show you what Jesus said. In John, don't worry about going to the Bible, just listen. in John 4:22, he said, "You worship that which you know not. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. And Jesus said unto her, I that speak unto thee am he." Yeah. But you worship that which you know not what? Jesus said that we worship what we know. Now, the question I have for you, and we've talked about this many years ago, but you enjoy music. But what about music makes it music? What is it about that combination of sounds and pitches, and what is it? Why is it that that is music? You worship, or you like, or give breath to drama or movies or television. Well, what is it about that that causes you to give importance to it? And these are the questions, because you are worshiping, or you're giving breath to, you're giving importance to that which you know not of. You may worship great literature. You may give importance to great music or classical music. You may give importance to a thousand things that you call entertainment or sports activities or whatever it is. The question is, why do you give it breath? It's not good enough to say, well, I like it. The question and the context and my role in preaching is to cause you to see what you are worshiping. I don't care if you do it or not. Am I tickling your understanding at all?
You miss me completely.
Okay.
Is it possible to go to some form of entertainment and not worship it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's where I am.
Are you seeing Christ? I mean, are you seeing Christ in whatever form of entertainment? I mean,
well, not necessarily. I guess in the real gutter in which I'm talking about, I just simply like to see the Dallas Cowboys get beat. Now, how in the world is that either good or bad or indifferent? I mean,
okay, stop a minute. Listen to what you just said.
Yeah.
Okay, you like it. When that happens.
Correct.
Therefore, you give importance to it when that happens.
Right.
Therefore, again, from God's standpoint, you worship that when it happens. The word worship has become a word in the English language which is connotates some kind of a high ecclesiastical drama in a cathedral or some. But from, I don't care what the word means to the English language. I want to know what it means to God. What it means to God is giving importance to. God is jealous. God wants you to worship Him and Him alone. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now, my question is, why do you want the Dallas Cowboys to be beaten? Why do you want, why do you enjoy a particular form of music? What is it about music that makes it music?
Sitting in a room in the middle of a cowboy game and you are playing against the Cowboys, you're bound to cause a row.
Okay, then you're not really worshiping the Cowboys, are you?
Oh, not at all.
Are not the Cowboys. You're worshiping the opportunity to focus everyone's eyes on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably so.
Okay, well, that's what I want you to see then. It has nothing to do with the Cowboys winning or losing. It has to do with your inbred desire to have your eyes on yourself. That's sin. Because it's the opposite of the abandonment of self. Now, in you, as you see that, then its hold on you will be gone. And you won't be in bondage to those kinds of activities any longer. It doesn't mean you stop watching the Cowboys. It means you now understand what's going on. That's all I want you to do, is to understand what you're doing. I want you to understand what it means when you think. I want you to understand what it means when you do, when any activity in life, I want you to see what it is. Behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when we see him, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. My role is to cause you to see Jesus in every element of your life, 24 hours a day. Does that communicate now? Okay.
Let's talk about music a little bit.
Yeah.
The other night we sat around the campfire and we all sang an hour. And I think everybody had, I had a good time. I think mostly everybody else had a very good time. Some of those songs had lyrics about God stuff. Some of them had non-God stuff lyrics, at least objectively looking at. Is there a difference?
First of all, number one, God doesn't know any difference between, that's what it means. They that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. There's no such thing as secular music or religious music. There's no such thing as secular life and religion. God doesn't know anything about differences. God sees only one. Now, for us to segregate, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's, I don't know what it is. But, I mean, there's no such thing as differences of music. That's a deception of the Antichrist. when religious people say, oh, I hate that music is of the devil and this music is of God. Well, that's just obscenity. God is all and in all.
Why do we use music here?
Music,
and it moves us. I mean,
yeah, music. That's what I'm. That's why I wanted to talk about what music is.
That's why I want to talk
about. Yeah. Okay. Let me just stop and think about it. Let's take some. There's got to be some song that comes to mind that every one of us here would think is a good song. We like it. I don't know what it is.
It's not Feelings by Morris Albert.
But there's some album that we would think was, that we universally and in general, the audience, the world would think is a value. Okay, it does something, it moves us. Why? Why is it? What is it about that strange combination of vocal patterns, of sounds, of pitches, of frequencies, of rhythms? What is it about that that causes a almost universal appeal among all people that hear it? Any suggestions?
Well, I always think about what you said, you know, when I left. I mean, you know, I asked you about music and you said, you know, all music was the seed crying out. And I've never heard a song that had lyrics that was an exception to that.
Well, but it has to cry out and be perceived by senses in some way that causes acceptance of it. Now, I've told this story before, and some of you have heard it, but a very long time ago, a group of, a professor at Stanford University did an experiment. And he wanted to find out this question. What is it about sounds, different, not necessarily music, but sounds in general, that can cause people's response or activities to change, to be altered by the act of music? And so he sent this a bunch of graduate students all over the world in a grant, and they recorded a lot of weird stuff. They recorded, and he had a feeling that it had something to do with a sound that would, or a combination of sounds that would put that person in a suggestible state. You know, where they, it's almost hypnotic. Anyway, what they did is they went to the Eskimo rites in Canada, they went to the voodoo rites in Haiti, the American Indians and somewhere in the Southwest, charismatic prayer meetings, where there was a collection of sounds that caused people to act as one and to become of one accord or of one mind, even for a moment, rock concert, whatever. And he took it back to the, they got all these sounds and analyzed them by various techniques, and they couldn't find any similarity. I mean, a lot of times they're just a bunch of chanting or sounds like screaming, but they universally had the same effect. And that culture that they were in, they caused the people to go in a state of super suggestibility. Yeah. Okay. What finally happened was, is they put the tape recording of that sound as in total and put it into a spectrum analyzer. And a spectrum analyzer records frequency versus RMS power. RMS mean, root mean square, the total power underneath the curve. And in every case, they found that the net sound of that recording was centered in two beat frequencies. And both of, and like 90% of the power of the sound was centered in these two beat frequencies. Not necessarily a frequency that was, I mean, you understand what RMS means, it's a combination thing. And those two beat frequencies were harmonics of natural body functions. And so that, whether in, you know, the brain, it was whether it was alpha or whatever the brain wave was, the heartbeat, the different, there were harmonics of these natural body functions. Now, that's pretty amazing if you stop and think about it.
That's why they became mm-hmm. like as one big body.
Right.
It is. It is amazing to me, but I don't see how that applies to what's on my mind right now, which is why do we use music here?
Okay, well, I'm getting to that. I'm getting to that.
Why would it be that I could be sitting in my room the other day and hear the first two or three notes of the threshing floor and burst into tears?
Well, part of it is music comes at us at two levels. Music with words. It comes at us at a subconscious level, which is this beat frequency stuff, and it comes at us at a conscious level, which is the words. You understand? And if those two combine, then there's an emotional response. But I said all that to say this. No one knows what the music in the temple was like. It's not known. It just wasn't, the music and its type wasn't connected. But we're talking 4,000 stringed instruments in the chorus of the temple, and at the time of Christ, 4,000 stringed instruments. Josephus said 20,000 silver trumpets and timbrels and etc. without number. We know that it was in a minor key, And that's about all we know of it. We believe, and the science, I mean, the archaeologists, whoever studies this stuff, believe that remnants of the temple music are in all the Middle Eastern countries in the minor keys, you know, in these. But no one really knows what that music was. But whatever it was, that music could move at the time of Christ, like at Passover or Pentecost, there were 6 million Jews in the temple, in the temple compound. And that music, when it was played, moved those, they made a rock concert look sick. Because this moved those people to act as one mind and as one accord. Why? The reason is because, as Christ said, it somehow elevated that natural being into the spirit realm. And it did so by this strange combination of words that went into the understanding and the rhythms and pitch, etc., which affected the subconscious, and that was a harmonic of natural body functions.
That's great, and that makes sense. Now, how does that differ from marijuana or soul power at a word of faith?
Well, that's what we're about to discover. That's why the temple was destroyed.
Because it sounds like something external.
Okay, listen to me.
Making you and me and...
Listen to me. That's why... Listen to that. You worship, you know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth.
He's responding to her question about worshiping in Jerusalem, isn't he?
Right.
And the temple had not yet been destroyed.
But it is about to be.
It is now.
So the point of it is that's why the temple was one of the reasons the temple was destroyed. That's one of the reasons that mankind has lost and will forever lose the temple music. Because they could approach by soul power that line between, you know, soul and spirit. Now, that's what's now... We already have all that in us, is what I'm telling you.
That's the question you just answered for me. That's what's happening when sometimes when I wake up in the morning and I catch a party going on inside of me, and what it is it's us singing John's music. And sometimes when I wake up, it's going on inside me.
Right. Okay, now what does all this have to do with time?
I have a question.
Okay.
Music, it seems, is different for me than for a lot of people because it's kind of like my bag. And I see it in kind of three different ways. There's the kind that I just turn on the radio and it's there and it's loud, it's noise, and, you know, a lot of times music's that for me. And then I, since I sing, there was that aspect of it, but it was still kind of the same thing because it was just... But lately, well, once, recently, like last week, I was singing and something really weird happened and it's like I forgot. It's like during the song... I blacked out, and then when the song was over, I came back and I started to cry. But it wasn't like it was music anymore.
Yeah.
So I was... Is there any difference between, like, performing and hearing, or...
No. It only to the extent that you... Some of us don't have any rhythm, and some of us don't have any voice to sing, and so, I mean... In terms of its perception, I don't think there's a difference, but in terms of its outflow, obviously there's a difference.
Yeah, but I mean, the way you feel it or whatever.
Well, again, and that's a function of your office in the body. I mean, there are offices in the body whose function, in the spirit, whose function it is to be more attuned to that arena than others. And
some
of prophecy.
Some of us work with it.
Yeah. Is this making any sense to you? Mm-hmm. Now I want to take it in and say, what has all this got to do with time and events and non-events? Okay? Music is rhythm. Rhythm is... repeated points in time, cycle of points in time. Okay? Now, therefore, if there was no passage of time, there could be no music.
Right.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, in one real sense, all that eternity is, or this spirit point, because spirit is means no time. All that music is, of all types, is this putting you by these natural body harmonics and functions, letting you have a taste of eternity. Am I communicating?
By that, do you mean that we become in tune with it?
Right. There's
start vibrating, and it and we begin to vibrate together, and there's a changed state.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Right. Just for a second.
Yeah.
What?
I'm blown away.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes.
As an infant, becoming aware of self and starting to become aware of the passage of time, what would you use as measures of time? The internal heartbeat. I mean, all the sound that goes on inside.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to visualize what could happen if a group of people took this knowledge and wrote music, wrote rhythms, laid down tracks under tracks.
Backtracks.
You know, you could
devastate the
Beatles.
You
say it's been done,
haven't
you?
Well, not done well.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, yeah.
The
okay.
Interesting thing is that the whole language of music is beat and time.
Right.
Which is, according to you, the language of time itself. Is
right.
Beats.
Right.
And then carried on that, almost like a carrier wave, carried on those beats and measures is the lyric.
Yeah.
Well, that's even how time is measured by seconds. They're beats.
So, right. Would like the feasts be the beats?
That's right. Now we're talking where I'm at.
That's what was blowing me away when I saw that. It was.
And when we, just to digress for 1 second, I'll shut up. I feel like I'm talking too much. But the other night around the campfire, we're singing the threshing floor. We're singing God's Love songs, and it's real nice. And then a couple minutes later, we're singing the Beach Boys.
Some of
for
you
us,
were singing the Beach Boys.
For us, there's no difference.
Right.
And we were simply as one organism being together, being one.
Right.
And there was oneness.
God doesn't give
it doesn't
a flip
make
about
any difference what the lyrics were.
That's right.
What about instrumental music?
Same thing.
Now to the outside,
we look like pagans.
We look like pagans.
That was Amy Grant.
But it is legitimate for us to be using music here.
Well, all things are permissible, all things edify not. I believe that music, the reason that I like, I mean, other than the fact that the whole idea of the one, the rhythm and that approach to the spirit, in John's music, you know, he can present concepts in music that I've tried to teach for 5 years, nobody understands, and then he puts it in a song and it's understood by everybody. It pisses me off. But
including himself, probably.
Well, he didn't understand it. I can remember when he wrote the lyric.
Yeah, he wrote songs and he didn't understand.
He had no idea what they meant. I mean, well, one of the great lines was in the word dust. A little more flesh has turned to dust. A little more water has turned to wine. When he wrote that, that was one of the first songs he wrote when he came. He had no idea what the hell he was talking about.
Yeah.
He was teaching one night, and he read a verse, and he said, "Wow, that's like give a cup of cold water in the morning."
Right.
So he wrote that song. He said, "Yeah, but I have no idea what."
Right. Okay, now. Okay, now, what has all this to do with what the subject originally was, which was non-events and passages of time and all that? The only events that are authorized in time in the scriptures are the seven feasts. Everything else is a non-event. The Jews at the time of Christ and before, they were either going to a feast, at a feast, or getting ready for the next feast. Now, it's going to be hard for you to don't escape this one. The reason, the meaning then, when Christ said it's finished, he finished the feasts. In other words, the only things that had any meaning, the only events in time that have any meaning are those seven feasts. Christ was fulfilled each one of those feasts. And really he fulfilled one that sort of was a late one. He was conceived by the Holy Spirit on the Feast of Hanukkah. So every time we celebrate Hanukkah, we compress time into that understanding. He was born in the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. Again, now, he fulfilled that feast. He fulfilled that segment of time. He was baptized in the Feast of Yom Kippur and probably was transfigured on the Feast of Yom Kippur. He brought meaning into everything up to that. He brought it into the funnel, into that singular point. He changed the water into wine on the Feast of Tabernacles and celebrated that wedding, thereby completing its meaning. He was crucified on the Feast of Passover, thereby completing its meaning. He was buried in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, thereby completing its meaning. He rose from the dead on the Feast of First Fruits, thereby completing its meaning in time. And the seed was shed on all flesh in the Feast of Pentecost, thereby completing its meaning. Now, therefore, when he said it's finished, he meant time was finished. Nothing more could be done by the natural. And that's why all the stuff that he said and Paul said and back to Isaiah said, I mean, some people get mad at me when I call a human race a sperm cell. Well, God called them the dust of the scales, grasshoppers, worms. Peter called them the best of them as the grass that fadeth away. And then the world gets mad at me when I call the human race sperm cells. My point to you is those... as long as your mind is still in time, God set aside these feast days that they may be the true events so that you may begin to understand what it means that you worship in spirit. And from now on, you are either celebrating a feast, getting ready to go to a feast, or just finished one and getting ready for the next one. Until the point comes in your understanding when your brain is so short-circuited that you live only in the place where you're hid with Christ in God. It's your permanent residence, which is the New Jerusalem. You understand? Now, music is integral to this because it's an instrument of causing magic things.
Music is a type. It's a type of the one song. And if here's what just hit me. If you draw 33 lines across, one for each year of Christ's physical life, and on each one of those lines you put 7 points from 7 feasts, there'd be a wave through each one of those. And when he said it was finished, what he meant was the song that is had been, which had existed from before.
before the foundation of the world had been brought into time and space and fulfilled by him.
Amen.
And all we're doing now is singing that song because the feasts coincide with that, and all that's happening is Christ is being shown forth, and as it converges,
But now can you see what it means? They that worship the Father must worship him in spirit and in truth. God didn't give a flip about all this other stuff. He didn't care about how many labels are on that this is Christian. You know? Unless this becomes you, it's totally meaningless. Otherwise, it's just, you know, some cultural overlay that is just competing with all your other alliances.
That then has to be what the Spirit is doing with the body.
Right. So now the body.
That song.
Right. The body. The scriptures talk a lot about agreement. If any two of you agree as touching anything, it shall be done for you by my Father which is in heaven. The word agreement is the Greek word for harmony.
Two people with the same note.
Right. But so therefore we are as a symphony. We're not, you know, no, God didn't want you to be the same. He'd be bored silly if you were the same as me.
So would we.
Especially. But he wants you to play the same note, the same song. And when you are when you're both playing the same song, then you're in harmony. And when you're in harmony, you can't be in harmony with just the two. You have to be in harmony with that which exists from before the foundation of the earth. Because any other, it's impossible. Do you understand that? No two people can be in agreement about anything. Because two is antagonism. If any two of you agree as touching anything, that means you have to. The only way two of you can agree is because you have a third, which is the Father. So therefore, you're walking in the light as he is in the light, then you have fellowship one with another.
And the most ridiculous thing in the world would be to see the instruments in a symphony orchestra trying to each play themselves.
Yeah, man. You worship, you know not what, but we know what we worship. The hour cometh and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. Every time the word truth is there, you know it means something that's not dependent on the passage of time. Cowboys are dependent on the passage of time. Stupid little buildings are dependent on the passage of time. Little projects are dependent on the passage of time. Anytime you have to invent something to give your life meaning, you better repent. Anytime you accept what the human race is given as to give your life meaning, you better turn from self. The hour cometh and now is when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. You see how time is the great deceiver of this fundamental basis? Because time causes you to invent non-events to give your life meaning, so you have something to look forward to, rather than being in spirit.
A week or so ago, Barbara mentioned that she'd been increasingly having the feeling of deja vu when we talked about it.
Deja vu.
Deja vu. What I was saying earlier the other day, what's happened to me is it's getting to the point now where it seems like whatever we're doing, it seems like we're always doing it. It's like this weekend, I, through most of the weekend, had the feeling that we're always camping. Like right now, I have the feeling like we're always here doing this. Tabernacle, all of it.
Does everybody understand so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now it was all a preamble. On Saturday, we will complete the concept of the Hebrew concept of time and how it applies to how we look at things and how it applies to reading the scriptures and studying. But in light of what I've just said about God is spirit, and they that worship him in spirit and it must worship him in spirit and in truth, and about time, I want to read a few of these crossfire spots. I have travailed for you through the corridors of darkness. I know your deepest longings and the depth of your emptiness, your pains and your fears. I know them all. I face the blackness of the God of this world with all that he could throw in my face, and I have overcome it. I have finished the course of evil and the death march of all flesh. I have put the first foot into the new world and have left the door open. The door is my life. Enter into it and follow me. As you have borne the image of the earthly, you shall also bear the image of the heavenly. Because I live, you shall live also. Behold the new heaven and the new earth. What are the fading flowers saying? Do waning sunsets and changing seasons point to some pattern in the universe? I am telling you that this life is not it. Who can live peacefully in the face of eventual death? Who can dare to build for tomorrow when there is no sure promise of tomorrow? How could you dare to love someone that will inevitably be taken away from you in death? What is there really to have and to hold? Your stay on earth is temporary. Every step you take is borrowed. Every breath you breathe could be your last. How long are you going to laugh it off and sleep it off? The stars are like lights lighting the way into another world, the world that can be only entered by my cross, my love, my truth, my way, my life. Enter into that world now. Listen closely amid the noise of the world. Perhaps your day of enlightenment is near. It is beginning to thunder with new clarity. Behold, I create all things new. I look at the total helplessness of all creation and declare, behold, I make all things new. I will not allow the evil and the death that is such a part of this existence to be recreated. There is a new world where you will not wither or die, where there are sunsets to behold that will not fade, that merely change patterns and colors. Love is the entrance of that new world. Do you know that love? The golden of my sunset reflect my warmth, and the flight of the white eagle tells you of my grace, soaring into the heights of mountains unclimbed, and set in place by the etchings of my hand. The redness of the rose, its depth and color, tell you of my intensity and my majesty. The sensitivity of a violet tells you of my softness and understanding. The roaring of the waves, the rumble of the thunder, and the tender falling of my rain make the symphony of heaven, accented by the wind crying at the doors to your heart. My snowflakes falling like petals of love upon the black earth, crystallizing my purity for all to see. The wilderness with its terrain of jagged rocks and liberated brush, growing wildly at will amidst the dry ground, flanked by stones and sprays of grass thrown here and there, a witness to the free form of my creation. The unyoked liberty at will available to all who will come into my rest. The glassy smoothness of a hidden lake behind the walls of my hand-carved canyons. The pools clear and life-giving. This rest put there for you, a weary traveler. Enter into that rest. Will it be today? What can make you arise from your spiritual death? Shall love songs from the earth herself awaken my love, my fair one? Shall a cup of cold water stir the remembrance in your heart of the garden where we walked and talked together? Shall the smell of a flower turn your head to my love waiting to be received? What shall unlock the death of your selfishness? Shall a blaze of a comet's light prompt you to inquire of me? Shall a display of my universe spectacular taunt your curiosity to wonder who I am? Will the words love your neighbor as yourself challenge you to know me further? Shall love expressed in death impress you to repent? Will the falling leaves remind you of your fall from my presence? Will the icy hand of winter pull you toward my warmth and forgiveness? What shall it be? For I shall try all things to reach you. I will cry to you in each crash of thunder, pound at your heart with tears of my rain. I will rage in the chamber of your darkness, standing as the only light within your cavern of death, waiting, waiting, waiting for the breaking of your pride, that you may be set free and live. One more. O evil and perverse generation, have I been so long in your midst and you have perceived me not? Have I not met your needs in a thousand ways and you have been blind? When I speak to you, you do not hear. You behave not as sons and daughters, but as strangers. You hold meetings in my name and give honor to men, but not to me. You boast that you serve me, but in truth you serve your own ego, for that which you do is calculated to enhance your own position and advance your own prestige, and you give it all a sanctimonious cloak. See, you say we shall pray. Well, prayer is farthest from your hearts. Prayer is for those whose hearts cry unto me in sincerity and who seek me earnestly, not for those with only a pretended piety and with hearts made fat with self-adulation, are only playing with me as a child would manipulate a puppet on a string. Get to the prayer closet. That is the reason I taught you to pray in secret, for there you are beset by fewer false motives and less temptations. He who does not habitually commune with me alone in true prayer is almost sure to find prayer impossible in public. You would make your religion pleasant and acceptable. You would make it comfortable and accommodating to your own schedule. Your Savior knew nothing of such a false religion. Lonely nights he wrestled in prayer. He spared not the flesh discomfort. Yes, and the more you pamper your flesh as to bodily comfort, the more it shall demand of you, until your physical needs become a tyrant unto you in your own house. Be not deceived, I gave you no such commandment. Hear me as I repeat to you what I gave to your fathers. Abandon yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. Yes, follow me, not some worldly form of a backslidden church. Think not that it becometh blessed because it bears the name church. My church is a living body, not a dead form. My people may be recognized by their humility and suffering, not by their social acceptability or self-advertised success, not by extravagant physical appointments of their structures, but by the grace of God at work in their hearts. Sacrifice is my status symbol, and man has not been eager to duplicate the spiritual leadership I had in servants like Paul or Jeremiah. Do you desire to follow me truly? Then follow the blood-stained prints of my feet. Go, as it were, into the cold, unyielding rock of the garden of Gethsemane, where self is put aside and the cup of suffering is accepted. Die to your own treacherous and deceitful heart. Then rise with determination to go on unflinchingly, not hoping to spare your life. Save your life, and you will surely lose it. Offer it up to me this very day, this very second, in a renewal of consecration unto sacrificial living, and I will accept you, and you shall know joy as new wine. Anybody have any comments?
How could you?
We'll let Butch be our spokesman.
You must feel something.
It's kind of like God's talking to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's talking to me right where I was at. I was preaching.
No comment could do anything but distract.
Yeah.
I have a sense of being in exactly the right place at exactly the right time, doing exactly the right thing.
Yeah.
That lyric comes to mind, the things of earth grow strangely dim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amen.